A new collection published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press features 100 essays and poems by Wisconsinites on a timely theme, hope. Beginning as an idea back in March of 2020, writers reflected on their own glimpses of hope, often in unexpected small places. We're joined now by the editor of the collection, as well as two contributors. And we want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Is there something big or small that brought you hope over the last year and a half or so? Are there writers you like to read to bring yourself some inspiration? Do you ever journal or write about things like hope in tough times? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. B.J. Hollers is an associate professor of English at UW-Eau Claire and founder and executive director of the Chippewa Valley Writers Guild. He's the author of 10 books and the editor of the new anthology we're talking about, Hope is the Thing, Wisconsinites on Perseverance in a Pandemic. B.J., welcome back.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Rob.
We also have two of the featured writers joining us. Ken Szymanski is an author and current Eau Claire writer-in-residence. He teaches English at DeLong Middle School, where his story of hope is set. Ken, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
And Kimberly Blazer is a former Wisconsin poet laureate and author of 5 poetry collections. She's a UW-Milwaukee professor and founding director of Indigenous Nations Poets. Kim, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much, Rob. Great to be here.
Well, BJ, start us off, with the inspiration for this project early last year.
Sure. Well, you know, as you said, it was March 2020. I think we were all feeling a little rudderless at this moment in time, a little shaky and trying to figure out how we could stay connected any way we could. And so for me, that meant, you know, going virtual, as it meant for so many folks, and reaching out to a lot of folks, writers and non-writers alike, and asking them, where are you getting your hope? You know, and in some ways it was sort of selfish. I honestly just wanted an inbox full of hope every day, you know. But as it turned out, other people wanted that too. And so I asked writers in 500 words or fewer to play off of Emily Dickinson's poem, Hope is the Thing with Feathers. Just instead of feathers, insert your hope there, tell us a bit about it. And then I would post those every day on the Chippewa Valley Writers Guild website. And from there, it became a book.
Give us a sense, BJ, of the range of writers and contributors you ended up with here, really across Wisconsin in a lot of different ways.
And that was really crucial to this project. You know, we have about 100 contributors. Hopefully they are racially, geographically, culturally diverse. We've got truck drivers, poet laureates, middle school students, octogenarians, small business owners, seasoned writers, all kinds of folks from all different backgrounds. And I think that's what really made this thing come together.
Well, we've got a couple writers, and you contributed yourself, BJ. Kim, I want to bring you into this, and you've got your essay, I think, queued up and ready to read. Do you want to give us a little background or just dive right in?
Sure, I can give you some background. So my piece comes from experiences in the earliest days of the pandemic and then on into the summer and beyond. The focus is on story as meshkiki, or medicine, survival medicine. So I believe that the connections we build through the vehicles of memory and story work like salve on our loneliness. And if we believe the stories that made us, we take them up. We tell them, we live them, and in this case, we dance them.
All right. Go ahead and hit us with the story.
Hope is in the dancing. Ikwe nimi itiwe.
I'm going to jump in there. We're getting some noise here on our connection while our engineer figures that out. We've got a few guests with us involved with this new project, Hope is the Thing, Wisconsinites on Perseverance in a Pandemic. BJ Hollers, Associate Professor of English at UW-Eau Claire, editor of that anthology and contributor. Kimberly Blazer, who hopefully we'll have ready to hear in just a moment, former Wisconsin poet laureate, and Ken Szymanski, author, Eau Claire writer in residence, teacher at DeLong Middle School, where his hope story takes place. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Okay, Kimberly, I think we've got that. No, we don't. I just saw a thumbs up. We'll figure out. If you have a story of hope to share with us, 800-642-1234. Okay, let's bring out Ken Szymanski now. You also have a reading for us, Ken. We'll get back to Kimberly's hopefully soon, but tell us a little bit about your writing and then share your reading of it, please.
Sure. My story takes place at the beginning of COVID as well, when schools across the state closed and had to go to remote learning without any notice. And it's about how middle school students can surprise us often when we least expect it. My story is called Hope is the Thing in quiz question number 7. For the latest in a long line of quarantine distance learning assignments, my eighth grade students listened to an episode of This American Life. In the story, a 9-year-old girl bombards her father with the biggest questions in the universe. Where do we go when we die? Is heaven another planet? How do you know what is true? And so on. After listening to the story, students logged into an online quiz. The final question, quiz question 7, echoed the one that the dad in the story had the hardest time answering. What is love? If I had been asked what is love in eighth grade, I would have responded, how am I supposed to know? Plus, the novelty of distance learning had worn thin. Jaded students were no longer giving their all with these ungraded supplemental assignments. I didn't imagine they were eager to dig into such a complex question. When I opened the quiz responses and got to quiz question 7, the first student had written a quick, I don't know. But some of these eighth graders, perhaps because of the story or the extended isolation, had turned into sages and philosophers. One student wrote, love is not giving up. It's more than just a word. It's a feeling. It's something you show. Love is something that lingers on your brain, even when you don't know it's there. Another student offered one idea from each side of his brain. Love could be something purely chemical. Its purpose is keeping our species alive. Or it's something of magic, powerful enough to bind people together. You choose which one to believe in. I can't imagine formulating those thoughts when I was in eighth grade. I'd have been more like this student who took a comical approach, simply writing, Kevin Love is a player for the Cleveland Cavaliers. While some took it lightly, others explored potential perils. One student answer ended with, love can make you feel whole, but it can also break you down until you are nothing. Another only saw the dangers, simply stating that love is pain. That's undeniable. Still, some chose to see beyond pain and even, in the case of one student, beyond our physical existence. She listened to the story with her mom and admitted that they both cried. Yet this teenager took solace in the idea that energy is neither created nor destroyed. And so that's why when someone dies, we can still feel their energy, even though they're not there. That's love, something that lingers on your brain, even when you don't know it's there. And the unwavering belief in it, voiced from quarantine middle schoolers, the next generation, is something more. It is hope.
Ken, great inspiration there from your students, who I think we might be too quick to underestimate. Do you feel in this tough year like you've gotten some inspiration and hope, apart from quiz question 7, from your students?
I think absolutely. I'm very excited about the next generation and the struggles that they went through with COVID. I think are really making them stronger, and they see what's wrong with the world and they're ready to take it on and start solving it.
Let's hear another reading now. We have Kimberly Blazer back with us. Sorry we lost you right as you were launching there, Kimberly, but we've got you back. If you've got the reading, go ahead and start from the top again, please.
Okay, great. I'm here and I'm hoping it's working. Okay, so can you hear me okay?
Loud, I just want to make sure. Loud and clear. We're really good.
Okay, yep. So I'll go ahead with the reading, and if you have questions, we can, you know, throw that in at the end. Hope is in the dancing. Ikwe nimi iti win. They died within days of one another on White Earth Reservation. The aunties I never knew, Naomi and Edith, victims of a late wave of the Spanish flu. At the kitchen table where our hands peeled apples, shelled peas, or cleaned rice, my mother would recall the story her own mother told. The sisters fell ill together. School-aged Naomi longed to see the Christmas pageant she now would not be a part of. From her bed, she pleaded to watch from a safe distance, just through the window. Pomp of the pageant, however, went on without her. Edith passed, and Naomi, who declared she did not want to live without her, followed her baby sister in that sad December. All this is legend. The exact details of that era swallowed by family truth. I do not know the numbers who died in the village of Nadiwash or who else in my extended family fell ill but survived. I do know the deaths haunted. My grandma's next daughter, born in 1931, carried the legacy of both lost girls in her name, Naomi, Edith, Antel. When the 2020 spread of coronavirus reached Wisconsin, I lived at first in the fever shadow of old losses. However, another legacy of Spanish flu on Great Lakes Ojibwe reservations continues today, the jingle dress dance. When the father of an ill young girl prayed for her healing, the regalia we still fashion and the dance we continue to perform came to him in a dream. Following his vision, women created dresses adorned with metal cones that sing with the dancer's moves. When four women performed the ceremony, the story says the sounds called the young girl back, growing stronger throughout the night. She finally joined the dancers. Anishinaabe people believe in the jingle dress tradition as healing for spirit and flesh. When the pandemic hit 100 years after the Spanish flu, several Native friends and I found hope in performing the symbolic dance. Connecting by Facebook, Instagram, text, and email, we grew our sacred circle. Soon, women across the continent joined in virtual ceremony. UWM colleagues, cousins in California, a former student in Walpole Island First Nation, White Earth friends, a fellow writer in Illinois, hundreds, all dancing for our ailing world. Each Saturday, we gathered our regalia, moccasins, hair adornments, feather fans, and the ancient medicine dress, Zangwe Gwe Magode. In our sheltering, we danced in March snow, in April by overflowing rivers and ponds, on torches when it rained. Spirits that move through the air, words and ancient rhythms of songs, motion of our bodies, the tinkling of the cones coming together, and our memory of survival across generations soothed us. As the weeks passed, my daughter arrived home from college. Now, before our dancing, our hands smooth and plait hair or tie one another's belt. After our dancing, as we rest on the sunny hillside, I tell her the stories. I share legends, old and new, of illness, hope, and healing, of Ikwe Nimi Itiwin, the woman's dance.
That's Kim Blazer, one of the contributors to the new collection, Hope is the Thing, Wisconsinites on Perseverance in a Pandemic. Also with us, another contributor, Ken Szymanski, and BJ Hollers, editor of the collection, finding hope and inspiration during the pandemic from Wisconsin writers. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time.